The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show, Q&A edition for this week. This week's focus on our Q&A is going to be some charitable remainder trust questions. This is kind of a holdover show or a continuation of the EDU show we did earlier this week. And that EDU show, we had esteemed guest Peter Scott on here, where we spent a good hour talking about CRTs, charitable remainder trusts, and how they can act as a possible replacement for the now gone, we all miss it, stretch IRA. And what we didn't get to is the five or so questions that we've got on CRTs that had come in from people that we had used as our reason for drawing Pete back into the office to do this recording. So we're going to dive into those questions today. And if you want some background on CRTs before you listen to these questions, to the EDU show right before this would be the source that I would refer you to. So welcome, Pete, again, and Jim's here, too.
Yep, thank you. It's good to be back.
Yeah. Long time
no see. What'd you do all week?
So anyway, yeah, at least the nice thing is we're on video, so we don't have to change clothes to make it look like we recorded this on a different day.
Oh, and I got all dressed up for nothing.
For those who don't know, we are recording this the exact same day we recorded the EDU show. In fact, just 2 minutes after the EDU show ended. But originally, we wanted to do the EDU show as a series of questions on CRTs. But as is typical with me and my show, I used Pete while I had him here to really start explaining the nuances and get y'all to understand the basics. How could we start answering questions without a basic understanding of CRTs? So we decided towards the end, we would do the EDU show separate as kind of the basics of a CRT. And now the Q&A show to answer five questions we have. And I will jump into them right away because I know, Pete, you have to get back to your main office before 4 o'clock today. And correct. Time is a ticking.
Yep.
So we're going to keep Chris on schedule. Sometimes he goes on and on and on. We are going to keep him on a dog leash, a very short dog leash, and not let him do that.
Good.
You ready for that, Chris?
Shoot.
All righty. So first question. Last week you mentioned you might have Pete on your show. I kind of was announcing a few weeks ago I was going to try to get you on, Pete. Huh. Last week, you mentioned that you might have Pete on your show. May I suggest a topic? I would love to learn more about charitable remainder trusts. This is the email that got me the idea, by the way, to do this whole series. Can you tell me when are CRTs appropriate and for who? When would they not be appropriate? If you are only a little bit charitably inclined, what is the minimum the charity can receive and the maximum your beneficiaries can receive and still get all the benefits of a CRT? Thank you again and keep up the good work. Stay healthy, Jim. Well, thank you, listener. I hope to stay healthy. I'm trying.
Oh, someone didn't use Do Not Disturb.
That someone shall remain nameless because he really means well, and sometimes he forgets things. And we'll just leave it at that. So, Pete, why don't we jump into this? When are CRTs appropriate, in your opinion, and for who?
Well, in this context, I assume you mean to replace the stretch IRA. And as we covered to I think, a good extent in the previous show on the CRTs, there, if you have older beneficiaries, and by that I mean someone 35 or older, as the in this case, a child that would inherit the IRA, but for the 10-year payout requirement now, and you have an IRA that may be substantial. And so what substantial is, I don't know, but certainly when you get into $700,000-$800,000 and above, then it makes some sense.
Okay, and when would they not be appropriate? Obviously the opposite of that scenario. If someone has just a little bit of money in an IRA, or as we talked about on the EDU podcast, I guess it's safe to say younger beneficiaries, definitely beneficiaries younger than 40, maybe younger than 35-ish.
Yeah.
But if they're really young, teens, preteens, 20s, the CRT, because of the way they operate, wouldn't work. Is that a safe bet?
Just wouldn't work ideally.
Yeah. Yeah,
you'd wouldn't work ideally.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to stretch it out over their lifetime. And as Chris pointed out, the income tax impact of that with it going into a discretionary trust for their benefit can be fairly substantial.
Now, his last question, what if you're not very charitably inclined? That's a tough one, because if your income beneficiary dies unexpectedly, even if they were 45 years old, they're going to have a payout last for the rest of their life because of their age, 45, they're above 40, the math works, they could get a payout for the rest of their life. They could die the very next day, the very next year.
Mm-hmm.
And if they were the only income beneficiary, all that money in the CRT that was never distributed to the decedent goes to the charity, correct, Pete?
Correct. Correct.
So if you're not very charitably inclined, I don't think you should be considering this, because it will go to a charity if the income beneficiary or beneficiaries pass away long before life expectancy. Would that be a safe assumption?
Yes, it is. You could put in sequential charitable, I mean, not charitable, sequential lifetime beneficiaries, so that you could stretch it out. You still would have to get past the 10% minimum remainder interest requirement based on their ages, but you could minimize that, or I should say at least mitigate the chances of the charitable remainder trust terminating at the death of one.
Well, let's talk about that, because that's a new concept that I wasn't aware of. I don't know if you were aware of it, Chris, but let's just say you have a 40-year-old beneficiary who's your son,
mm-hmm.
and that son has a 20-year-old, his own son of 20, so your grandson. Are you saying you could name the 40-year-old as primary, for lack of a better term? And then the grandson as contingent, if your son, the first income beneficiary, passes away unexpectedly? There's got to be a catch on that, because wouldn't you have to would the payments continue over the first beneficiary's assumptions? That couldn't be it, though, because the remainder beneficiary is so much younger. How would that work conceptually? I'm confused on that.
Well, the 20-year-old, obviously, being one of the beneficiaries, is going to cause the calculation to fail the 10% remainder interest test. So what you're looking at really is you take the two lives together and in the software plug that in and determine if you meet the 10% remainder interest criteria. So I would suggest that both beneficiaries are going to have to be 35 years of age or older for it to work.
Okay, so I see how it works. When you use Number Cruncher, we already disclosed, folks, most estate planning attorneys are going to use Steve Lineberg's Number Cruncher. So you're in there, you're using Number Cruncher, you are trying to figure this out. Let's just say you have a 40-year-old and a 48-year-old. you're saying you would determine the payout based on the average age of both of them together or the average life expectancy of both of them as one. So the 40-year-old may be getting a little bit more than they would have, and the 48-year-old a little bit less than they would have. In other words, you're blending those two life expectancies, and essentially as long as one of them is at least alive, this much money is coming out, and the two of them just split it? Or do I have that wrong?
Well, when I answered the question, I said you could do them sequentially. So you could take one and then the other. You could make it a joint as well, but again, it's going to be based on the joint life expectancy, however those are calculated. And of course, the IRS or Treasury publishes those tables, which are built into the software that you've referenced. So it's not going to allow you to stretch it out, and that's maybe a confusing term. It's not going to allow the trust to last longer than the life expectancy of the oldest, or if they're doing like they do for second to die life insurance, it could last a little longer because of the actuarial value of two lives as opposed to one. I'm not sure how that calculation is made, but if one of them is not going to meet the 10% minimum required distribution to the charity at the end, it's going to fail just on that alone. So you just, I'm not well versed enough in these calculations. We use the software, and at one point in my career before the software, we were able to calculate those, but that's long since passed me by.
So if you're doing it jointly, you said the other way is sequentially. Mm-hmm. How would, conceptually, in less than 2 minutes, how would a sequential calculation work?
So if you have two children, let's say 35 and 40, you would say we're going to pay this out for the lifetime of the 40-year-old, and at the 40-year-old's death, it will pay to the sibling for the remainder of their life.
Based on the payout that the 40-year-old was getting, you don't recalculate it to the new life expectancy.
Well, the payout rate, you can pick the payout rate. The only limitation on that is the 10% remainder requirement for the charity. So if you're going to maximize it, it's probably going to be the payout rate that would be for the oldest, let me rephrase that, for the youngest beneficiary, and then they both would be restricted to that payout. It's not, the payout rate's not going to change. It's going to be a calculation that's done at the very beginning.
Now, would the younger beneficiary get anything while the older one is alive, or the beneficiary number one? I don't know if it keys off of age or who you choose. In other words, could both of them just split the payment, or does one have to get it and only after that one dies, the other one gets it?
No, you can have them both get it, or you can run it sequentially. So you could have them both be beneficiaries and divide up whatever the distribution is each year. Or you could have them run sequentially, as I said in the example.
Okay, perfect. I don't want to get too deep into that. I could turn this into a whole EDU show, and I don't want to do that. Anything you want to add on that, Chris, at all?
No. I'm ready for question two.
Okay. Question two. Here is my, hopefully, pithy question regarding CRTs. It's quite a long question, but I will get through it real quickly because the meat and potato part of it, I want Chris to be able, Pete to get into it as quickly as possible. We currently are 65 and 64, and we have a 38-year-old living son. Because of an autoimmune disease he has, he does not work and has no work history for Social Security or Medicare. There are no other children involved in this question. We have $4.7 million in assets, $2.5 million in always taxable IRA accounts, $500,000 in never taxable Roth accounts, $800,000 in home equity, and the rest of our money in maybe taxable brokerage accounts. So they have about $2.5 million, Pete, in an always taxable IRA. 38-year-old disabled son.
Mm-hmm.
We live frugally, but comfortably. And then he gets into his spending and his strategy on Social Security that doesn't really apply to this. So we're going to skip all that and get into his question. You mentioned in the past that CRTs can pass 5% of the trust value to my beneficiary for their life. Is that number fixed or can it pay more? If it pays more, who decides if it pays more? Is the rate determined when the trust is created? If so, can it be adjusted as we age so the percentage that is paid out could increase? Also, is there any inflationary adjustment that can be set up once it begins paying out? I'm just trying to get a view of the guaranteed income my son could have from the trust as a percentage of the trust balance. I'm thinking the CRT may be a way to go for me because my son really doesn't have any training, experience, or discipline for handling a large lump sum inheritance. So here we have a son who's disabled, and because of that, Chris really doesn't have any Chris and Pete doesn't have any work history, doesn't pay into Social Security or Medicare, is probably not going to be able to. The family is looking to try to help him and thinking, hey, could this CRT strategy kind of provide him some income for the rest of his life if we passed away? But could we change the payout amounts, or is it set when they open it, Pete? And can there be any increases in the payouts to keep pace with inflation? How would you address his questions?
Okay, well, let me just take them one at a time. It'd probably be the easiest way. I said you mentioned in the past that CRTs can pass 5% of the trust value to my beneficiary for life. That's true. There is a minimum payout rate of 5% of the value of the trust. It can be higher based on the software calculations. And I ran the numbers for them and it's going to pass to the charitable remainder trust at their death because they can't put the IRA in before that. And so a 38-year-old can go as high as 6.557% payout rate and still and just satisfy the 10% remainder 10% remainder requirement. So it can be, but that's going to be the 5% is the minimum. It can be higher, and that's going to depend upon the calculation, and that depends on a combination of the payout rate, the interest rate that's applied, what's called 75-20 rate, and the age of the beneficiary. And so the next question is that number fixed or can it be higher? It is fixed once it's in place, but it can be higher depending upon those requirements. And who decides that? Well, the clients decide that. In this case, mom and dad would set that up in their will or their trust. And is the rate determined when the trust is created? That's true. It is. Can it be adjusted as we age so the percentage can increase? Well, in this case, what they would do in their will or their trust is they would put a formula, charitable remainder trust, in that would lay out the calculation. If they wanted to maximize the rate that the son would receive, what they would do is instruct the trustee or the personal representative when they establish the charitable remainder trust to run the calculation to determine the maximum payout rate for the son based on his age at that point in time. And then once that's determined, it's going to be fixed. And then did I get that one? Yeah. So, and then is there any inflation adjustment that can be used once it begins paying out? There is not. However, if it's designed as a unit trust, which would apply the payout rate against the principal balance of the trust each year, then assuming the trust is keeping pace with inflation, then of course the amount of dollars that would come out would be inflation adjustment. The percentage rate cannot be changed, but if inflation is built in, then the trust will be earning more, presumably, and will increase in value, and that may at least address some of the inflation increases. Jim?
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, I always forget which way turns the mic on or off, so I never know if I'm talking or not. I'm thinking out loud in my head, but I'm just wondering on something, Pete, because of this inflation issue. And granted, you could do a unit trust, as you said, which would pay out, say, 5% of the trust value every year. But if the trust is paying out 5% every year and inflation is, 2%, there's no guarantee the trust is going to keep growing with those big distributions and reductions due to inflation. And the value of that trust would steadily drop. It doesn't necessarily increase. So the payments could get smaller, could they not, every year under a unit trust payout?
Sure they could. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So I'm thinking out loud. Under the new stretch rules, you don't have to take anything out for 10 years. Could it be possible at the death of the parent, say he's got $2.5 million, say half of that, $1.25 million, goes into a CRT and begins paying out and therefore dropping. The other quarter and a half also pays to another CRT. But the law says the IRA doesn't have to pay out to the beneficiary until December 31st of the 10th year following death. So that trustee says, we're not going to open
it. It'd be the five-year rule on a charity, Jim.
Oh, it's a five-year rule on a charity. Dang it, darn
it's
it.
It's okay. Not a designated beneficiary, so you could buy. I see where you were headed with the down the road, but you could delay it for 5 years, so it'd be kind of like a step up for some kind of inflation adjustment where a second CRT would kick in 5 years later.
Right, and not 10 years. Okay. Chris is correct, folks. I didn't pick up on that little nuance. It would not be a designated beneficiary, so it would have to pay out in 5 years, not 10. And if named as the trust, and you're certain on that, I'm trying to remember my Ed Slott days, but you seem much more certain than I do. So
only because I happened to see it for another reason yesterday in a Kitsis article where it was the breakdown of the new beneficiary rules after the Secure Act, and charities are named specifically as one of the five-year
payouts.
And, okay, and if the CRT is considered a charity, which
It would be a charity, yeah. Yep. What I was just trying to think, Pete, is, hey, for the first 10 years, you get this, and then the next 10 years, this money comes in and starts paying out, and that could kind of build in a little inflationary hedge. It could be done for 5 years. Could that be done that way, Pete, that two-thirds of the IRA pays out into the first CRT, one-third stays in the IRA, doesn't have to pay out until the end of the fifth year because it's going to a charity, and at the end of the fifth year, then the other third goes into a new CRT and starts paying the son, and that can kind of build in a little inflationary hedge, or am I off base there?
Well, I think conceptually you're on target, but the question is, would the custodian allow that, the custodian of the IRA or several IRAs?
Well, the custodian should allow it because the law is it has to be liquidated within 5 years. They'll get a hold of the beneficiary, which would be the trustee of the CRT. Remember, the charity is the CRT. It's not the remaindum charity. It's not the ultimate charity. It's the CRT. So the trustee says, we don't want it yet. We'll take it later. And they don't have to. The law says nothing has to come out of that IRA for 5 years. So the trustee the custodian just holds it. Now, theoretically, could the custodian say, we don't want to hold it, we're going to make you move it? Sure, and you can move it to a custodian that would hold it.
Exactly.
But it doesn't work as well as my idea of 10 years, Chris, because 10 years of growth could really grow that remaining third and then add some inflationary protection later. So I don't see it working to the level that I had hoped. Or could it, Pete? Could it be left to a family member? And then it gets paid out to the family member, but could a human then create a CRT? In other words, it pays out all this income to them, say $500,000 in 10 years. Could a family member take $500,000, put it into a CRT, and hopefully get a nice offsetting income tax deduction or close to it, and that that CRT that gets set up pays out to this disabled beneficiary.
You could do that. The it's not going to be a wash on the income coming out of the IRA and the amount of deduction that's going to be available for the charitable donation. But yes, you could. You certainly could decrease the tax. But, you know, you have the limitations on charitable deductions now. And, well, of course, we've had those for some time. And then you have the, what is it, $20,000 standard deduction. So it doesn't work out that it's a complete wash. But, yeah, you could.
Okay. Now, with that same strategy, before we get to the next question, under that same strategy, can a CRT be funded, Pete, intermittently? In other words, the law says on the new stretch, nothing has to come out as long as everything is out by the last day of the 10th year. But it doesn't mean you can't take it. There's no RMDs. There are no more RMDs on inherited IRAs to a non-spouse beneficiary. So, but could that beneficiary selectively, hey, this year I'm going to take $100,000 out and put it into the CRT, and then in two more years I'm going to take another $400,000 out and put it into the CRT? Can you fund an existing CRT intermittently, or is it a lump sum, one-and-done funding?
If it's a unit trust, you can make additional contributions provided the trust permits it. And a charitable remainder annuity trust, you cannot.
So one way around this inflationary issue, especially if there were other beneficiaries. Now, the listener who wrote that question said there are no other children beneficiaries, but there could be other people listening. Could they not create or leave some of the IRA to one of the children or to another trust, so to speak, where that trust or that child can selectively take money out over the next 10 years and pump it into the uni trust, the CRUT is what they're called, folks, child remainder uni trust, put it into that CRUT intermittently over that 10-year period to help keep pace with inflation at least for 10 years?
You could do that. I think I'd want to run the numbers, because my feeling is that the tax cost of that, even with the charitable deductions, is going to more than offset, or should say exceed, the inflationary protection. I think it could be very expensive doing it that way from a tax standpoint.
Okay, that makes sense.
We're thinking
all
about
right. I'm going down that little rabbit hole. My little head is spinning.
You keep thinking.
Okay. All right, next question. I had a quick question on your recent podcast outlining the potential of life insurance and CRT path for large IRAs. As I understand it, the primary attraction of this approach is the potential tax savings for the beneficiaries. Here's my question. Are you assuming the IRA used is a non-Roth traditional IRA? Would this approach still make sense for a very large Roth IRA? Or would the inherent tax advantage features of a Roth make this approach of the CRT unnecessary? I know what my answer is going to be, but what is your answer, Pete?
Well, I don't see the advantage. With a Roth, actually, you would be more up to date on this. There's still no required. Let me ask you this: does a 10-year rule apply to Roths?
The 10-year rule will apply to Roths, but it'll be received tax free.
So
to me, the Roth, you should set it up. This is what I would do, because I think you agree, Pete. It doesn't make any sense for a Roth. And Chris, would you concur?
Not if you're looking for a stretch feature. If it's for the CRT, could make sense if you're truly focused more on the charitable portion of that, and you're wanting to kind of control the distributions into a lifetime income stream. But you're not kind of maximizing the tax benefits of having this never taxed money flow to the charity ultimately. So yeah, it's
exactly
it's not as attractive for the reasons we've been talking about on this show, but there could be other reasons why you might want to use a Roth to fund a CRT.
Well, and you could insert a trust in there, a discretionary trust, as right. a beneficiary of the Roth and control the distributions.
Right. Yep.
Exactly. And that's where I would go. I see no reason to ever leave Roth money to a charity.
Yeah.
Unless you have no other money and you are wicked charitably inclined and you got no humans to leave it to. Other than that, Roth money goes to humans. IRA money goes to charities. And under the step-up and basis rules, non-IRA brokerage assets could go to either. But a Roth account, to me, should never go to charity. It's already tax-free. Give it to a human.
Right.
If you got no other humans to give it to, then yeah, give it to a charity. If there's nothing else you're going to do with it and you're dying, and all right, give it to a charity.
Yeah, and just give it cleanly without the expense of the CRT.
Exactly. But other than that, if you are looking to get a stretch out with a Roth, here's what I would do is you could, as Pete said, create a discretionary trust and just pay the Roth out to the discretionary trust. It's received tax-free, so you're not hit with that onerous. Anything above $12,700 is taxed at the highest income level. If you're leaving $1 million in a Roth to a discretionary trust, it's received tax-free. If you leave $1 million in an IRA to a discretionary trust, anything above $12,700, that's a hell of a lot of money, above $12,700 is taxed at the highest effective marginal, highest marginal rate that's out there. At the time you die, not at the time you set it up. You set it up now where the highest rate, I think, is 37 or 39. I forget what it is. But when you die, it's at 52. That's the rate that is paid. But in a Roth, it's already tax-free, folks. Pay it to a discretionary trust and set the parameters of the discretionary trust up that only a little bit goes out. X amount dollars go out every year, and there's the stretch. And you can put in all these different features, HEMS, health, education, maintenance, support. In other words, people can get more money out if the beneficiaries need it. And I won't get too deep into that. But I think that's the way you would create a stretch, Pete, with a Roth is just using a discretionary mm-hmm. trust. What do you think?
I agree.
The CRT makes no sense.
No, nope. Right.
Ultimately, it's just I can't see it. If you're charitably inclined and you want to leave an income stream to the kids, take some of your Roth, give it to a charity, take the rest, put in a discretionary trust to the kids. Mm-hmm. You're going to have much more flexibility in the discretionary trust than you're going to have with the CRT. CRT, to me, should only be used for a traditional IRA because it's received tax-free because it ultimately goes to a charity. That's how I would view it. I agree with you, Chris, it's not wrong. I just don't see the advantage of it. Could there ever be an advantage to it? Perhaps, but I can't see it because the discretionary trust could create that stretch out, right. Chris, and yep. you wouldn't need to use the CRT. Okay. Next question. On the internet, which you know is true then, they found this on the internet. On the internet, I ran across something that was reported as a new option in charitable remainder trusts. It seems as though you can declare that if the value of the CRT falls to 10% of the original value, the CRT will be closed immediately and the proceeds transferred to the charity. Thus, you could guarantee the 10% remainder of the original corpus goes to the charity. Corpus, folks, is attorney speak for money you put in originally. So 10% remainder of the original corpus goes to the charity. If so, would it let you bypass the 10% remainder test? Maybe the 5% payout test or remove the limit on the payout rate altogether. Thank you guys for what you do. Best regards, George from Georgia. But then he gives his real name, which isn't George, but he's on to our little trick of calling everyone George. I never heard of that, Pete. I've got questions if that is true, but what are your thoughts on what he wrote?
I've not heard of it either, and even if it is a technique that's being proposed, it would not eliminate the 10% remainder. It wouldn't eliminate the 5% minimum payout rate without Congress passing a change in the charitable remainder laws that are in the Internal Revenue Code.
And my thoughts are, he's saying that there's a provision now you can put in the CRT that if, let's say, because we keep using this $2 million that we did on the EDU show, that someone put $2 million in. So he's saying if the trust fell to $200,000, and it could fall to that level, folks, because it's been paying out money to the beneficiaries, and maybe it was invested poorly, and it's tanking. But eventually, I'm not saying it happened a year later or 2 years later, but maybe 10, 15 years into the lifetime payout, the $2 million is down to $200,000. And it's hitting the 10% remainder that needed to go, in his example, to the charity. As we spoke about, Pete, on the EDU show, it doesn't mean that money has to go to the charity. Nothing could ultimately pass to the charity if it all blows up. What matters is on the first day it's set up that the actuarial payouts are based on, if everything worked to actuarially projected, 10% is there and will ultimately go to the charity. But there's no requirement the charity gets 10%. The way he wrote it, I think it's if someone wants to make sure the charity does get 10%, they put this in there. But there's no rule that the charity has to get 10, only that it was set up to receive 10. The charity may get more or may get less. So I'm not quite sure why you would want that provision, unless I'm totally wrong on my understanding, unless you, as the creator of the Child Remainder Trust, not only want to help the income benefit beneficiaries, rather, you do want to make sure 10%, no less than 10%, goes to charity. That could be the only way I could see this provision, or do you think I'm missing something, Pete?
Nope. I think you're dead on that one.
Do you have any thoughts, Chris? Because I can't see where this provision comes in handy unless...
No, I see where he was trying to go. Sure. He was trying to go to get higher distributions, to bypass and get higher distributions while not failing the 10% test by having written into the trust language that automatically, when it gets to 10%, terminates and sends it to the charity, thus guaranteeing instead of actuarially projecting a 10% remainder, forcing a 10% remainder with this termination clause. I think that's where he was going with this.
I see. So the idea, okay.
I don't think that
makes perfect sense. So the idea is, hey, we're paying out more than actuarially seems sound, right, but we have this provision that if the trust reaches, again, in my example, on a $2 million donation into the trust, if it reaches $200,000, it closes, right, and the charity gets that. So the charity is guaranteed the 10%. So could we not use that to actuarially pay out more than would be sound? With that understanding, Pete, is that even possible? You're saying that would require a change in tax code, as to your understanding.
Right. And I've not seen anything come across that would suggest that Congress has even addressed that, which I'm fairly confident they haven't at this point.
Well, listener, if you could find, you just said you saw over the internet, was this, Joe's used estate planning website, or was it a high-end, very knowledgeable estate planning blog, and they're giving the chapter and verse of the IRC code or the PLR that allowed this or something? If you could share a little more info, even though Pete's not doing this anymore, I think he would be interested in seeing it as well, but it would give us a little more feedback of where on the internet you got this idea that you could do that.
Yep.
Because I see what you're saying, Chris. I misread what he was saying or misunderstood. I think the way you described it is what he's trying to do. Hey, we want to pay out more.
Right.
But can we do it if we say, hey, under no circumstances will less than 10% go to the charity? But could you not, Pete, create this and then you said already on the EDU show, you could lump sum pay out the trust. And I may not be describing that correctly, but they put the $2 million in. They set up all the payment. Clearly, this listener wants to try to get more money to the income beneficiaries. Could they not at some point in time just close the trust, give whatever actuarially needs to go to the charity, and then just pay the rest to the income beneficiaries?
They could do that in a lump sum, provided that all parties agree. That would be the trustee, the charity, and the lifetime
beneficiary. Right, all three have to agree.
Yeah, and you probably would need to get judicial. That means go to court and get a judge to say, yeah, that's okay. Yeah.
All right, so that's just going to be a pain, so that's why he's trying that other thought.
Yeah, okay. You've got 4 minutes to do the last question, if you can squeeze it in.
Well, this depends. See how
Jim,
does.
Jim can't. I can.
Perfect.
okay.
This is... You want me to do it?
If you guys will let me read the damn question, we'll get through it in 4 minutes.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Okay. Question is, I have been trying to get a feel for approximately how much the administration and tax filing costs will be each year for a CRT. And then he gets into how he kind of calculated it, and he came to it's only going to cost $35 a year, or a little bit over $35 a year in expenses for doing the attorney, accountant, and tax preparation fees for the trust.
I think he meant that's the postage on the documents for all of that.
And he says, are they really this cheap to run? If not, can you ballpark an estimate for what the administration and tax filing fees for a CRT will be? He gave me the math on how he came up with $35. I don't think it's accurate, but he makes a compelling case. I just don't think you could go by what he is listing. You have all that info, Pete. What are your thoughts? Is it only $35 a year in administration fees and tax filing fees?
No, it'll be more than that. But the easy way to get the answer, there are a number of different companies around the country that administer charitable remainder trusts. They're not the trustee, but they administer them. They take care of the tax filings. They take care of compliance. They take care of all of that information. And they base their rates on the amount of money that's in the charitable remainder trust. And they're published rates. So it's pretty easy to look those up, find them, look at how much you're anticipating putting into a charitable remainder trust. And you can come pretty close to what the ongoing costs of administration of that trust are.
And they'll do the tax returns and the distributions and all the admin of that trust.
Typically they do. I think you may be able to do some of it a la carte, but I'm not sure. Every CRT that I've done, I've required that they have a plan administrator professional doing it because, again, the trustees for my charitable remainder trust typically are the clients or the client's family.
So you still have the client's family as the trustee, folks. You still have a trustee. You just have an admin who's helping the trustee. This is the company that's going to do the tax return, the legal filings, the distributions, and you have the trustee overseeing everything. I think it's a wonderful way to do it, but I agree. I think it's more than $35. I think Chris hit the nail on the head. Maybe that's the postage, but I would imagine it's going to be more than $35, listener. There's going to be a cost. We listed that on the EDU show. Part of the downside, the cost. You're going to have to pay the legal fees to an attorney to create it, and then the ongoing administrative fees to someone to run it. Naming a family member might be okay for the trustee part and to placate the beneficiaries and act as the go-between the trust document and the beneficiaries. But that trustee isn't going to have the time, knowledge, wherewithal, or ability to do the administrative part, and they're going to want to hire someone. And you want to give them that ability, in my opinion. And Chris, as we mentioned before on this podcast, what's it matter what it costs? You're dead.
Well,
don't worry about it.
True.
Trust
your kids
is going to handle the cost.
So we'll let Pete go. So thanks a lot, Pete, for sticking with us. I think we snuck you in under the wire to get you out of here on time.
Yep, I got my coat on and I'm
headed out the door. Down, so we really appreciate it.
Well, it's been fun and wish you guys the very best.
And good luck in your retirement.
Pete, thanks for coming on again and happy retirement.
Thank you.
Perfect. Thanks, Pete. So everybody else, we want to thank you for listening. If you've got your own questions, I think this cleans up, Jim, all the outstanding CRT questions, doesn't it? Aren't we caught up on those?
I believe all the CRT questions are answered. Not saying we're not going to get more in. Yeah. We have other estate planning questions. We will get a new Pete in to answer them, but we will get to those as soon as we can.
Perfect. So we want to thank everybody for listening. If you have your own questions you'd like to send in for the Q&A show, best way to do that is go to our website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. On there, you'll find a contact form where you can send us messages, including questions for the show. You can also email Jim directly, jim@jimhelps.com will work. And the website, though, has a lot of information about who we are, what we do, etc. If you're a new listener or aren't quite sure what it is we're all about, website has all that information on there. Anything else you want to say before we bail out?
No, that's about it. Hopefully people enjoyed this Q&A show and the EDU show on CRTs. I think they're a good strategy in the right situation. They're not for everyone, but where they fit in, I think they should be something you evaluate, especially you Vanguardian do-it-yourselfers who've amassed 80, 85, 90% of your wealth in always taxable retirement accounts. You really should be looking at these, especially if your children are over the age of 40 or will realistically be over the age of 40 when you pass away and leave it to them. It could very well be a good strategy. And don't forget, as we said in the EDU show, the ultimate remaindom charity can be a donor advised fund that could act as your own private family foundation. You can keep it right at Vanguard. All you Vanguardians, do it right there at Vanguard. But it will allow your grandchildren and great-grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren, generations that you won't even know, be able to partake and enjoy in charitable giving to causes and purposes or churches that are important to you. And you can involve future generations in that. So I think the strategy, Chris, of a CRT married to an irrevocable life insurance policy with a second-to-die guaranteed universal life policy, ultimately paying from the CRT into a family foundation donor-advised fund, is a wonderful way for estate planning and legacy planning that a lot of people should look at.
Yep, I agree. So thank you for everybody. Thank everyone for listening. We'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.